The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I was away last month teaching the month-long retreat at Spirit Rock, and that's always such a special time of the year for me to get to spend that time with a group of people who are practicing for that length of time. And that ended on Saturday, and so I'm still a little bit in the field of that. And it's continuing. The retreat is continuing. It's a two-month retreat at Spirit Rock, and there's two different teaching teams, one for February, one for March. And so I'm kind of aware, too, that right now there's a Dharma talk going on at Spirit Rock for the March month-long retreat. So it's lovely to kind of keep that connection. But a piece that I was reflecting on is, still feeling a little bit of the connection to the retreat. I was thinking, well, what from the retreat, what kind of piece feels like it might be relevant to offer here? And the piece that kind of came up for me was remembering how often particular kind of questions or orientation came up that I think is pretty common for many of us on a spiritual journey. So something along the lines of, how long does it take for some of this stuff to change? That's one kind of question. And another one that came up was somebody kind of arriving in a new place and kind of, wow, I've never experienced this before. And the question that she brought to me is, and what's next? What's next? So both of these are kind of like two flavors of the quality of impatience and how important the quality of patience is what I'd like to explore today, how important the quality of patience is on our journey, on our spiritual journey. Patience is one of the, there's a list of 10 qualities that the Buddha was said to have worked on in the kind of mythology of the Buddha, said to have worked on in the many lifetimes prior to the lifetime when he became a Buddha. And these 10 qualities are called the 10 perfections. And they're qualities, I won't name them all, but they're qualities like generosity and kindness and equanimity and patience and energy and virtue, that kind of quality, just beautiful qualities of mind that support us on our journey. And they are, in this kind of mythology of the Buddha, they're understood to be qualities that we open to and explore cultivating not only on the cushion, not only in the meditation practice, but also in our daily lives. And so they're really qualities that we can orient around right in the midst of our lives. And so I'll speak both about the meditation side of things, where we can maybe look at cultivating this quality and how to look at the development of patience in meditation, but also in our lives, because this list of the paramis, at least in Asian countries, the teachers in Asian countries will often ask students, so how's your parami practice going? How are you cultivating? What are you working on in your daily life? And, you know, these kind of qualities like patience, there's so many different ways that we can cultivate patience in our daily life. You know, driving on the freeway, stopped at a stop sign, waiting in line at the grocery store. There's just so many ways and so many ways we can bring a memory or a recognition of these are helpful qualities. Here I am in this situation, feeling impatient, and letting that be kind of like a wake-up bell. It's like, oh, impatience is happening. What's going on there? And can I cultivate the quality of patience here? So this is just what I'd like to explore this evening, this quality of patience. The Buddha emphasized that the path that we're on this spiritual journey, is a gradual path. He said that over and over again. It doesn't stop us from the what's next or how long will it take for this to go away, but that he really did emphasize this is a gradual unfolding. The whole of the Eightfold Path is called in some ways the gradual training. So and he gave some analogies about the gradual nature of the training. One that I like is he talks about a carpenter using a tool, and that every day the carpenter picks up this tool. I think he called it an adze. I think that's a kind of a hammer or something like that. Every day the carpenter picks up that tool, they might think, you know, that they know as they're picking up the tool, and over the course of many, many years of using the same tool, the handle kind of begins to really fit the hand nicely, because very gradually, each time the carpenter picks up the tool, a little bit of the wood wears away with that contact. And he said, the Buddha said, you know, just as the carpenter is not aware in this moment, so much of the handle of the adze is wearing away today, and so much will wear away tomorrow, and yet still the carpenter understands that the handle is wearing away. This is a good image for the gradual nature of the path. Now that might sound a little slow, slow to us. and yet, in my own experience, there's this interesting blend of the gradual nature of the path and these moments of seeing something in a different way. Moments of seeing how, oh, I'm just hooked to this right now, or the mind is caught in this right now. And so there's a way that a saying, I don't know where the saying comes from, that the Dharma, the path, is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. And this to me is pointed to by, you know, as we begin to just bring mindfulness to our practice, at the very beginning of our practice, and I think all of you who have been, you know, if you've only been practicing for a few weeks or if you've been practicing for a few years, often there's something that happens that begins to help us to kind of recognize, oh, this is helpful. You know, something feels a little different here. I know in my own practice, in the first couple of months of practice, I oriented around trying to, in daily life, I oriented around trying to notice anger happening, just to bring mindfulness to it in a really simple way. And within a few weeks, I began recognizing that the power of that simple exercise of just noticing the anger was helping me have more space around it. I wasn't as caught in it. I wasn't as spun out around it. I could notice it more quickly and move on. And so within a very short time, I noticed some benefits of this simple practice. And so that's a way in which the Dharma is good in the beginning. You know, just like within a few weeks, I was like, oh yeah, this is helpful. And then within a couple months, there was a kind of a recognition or an understanding of something a little more clear, a little more of a letting go around anger, a seeing of the mind kind of moving in the direction of anger and just going, yeah, that's going to hurt. Yeah, just, and the mind, not me trying to stop it, but the mind just kind of just letting it go and seeing how the power of this simple practice led to, essentially in that case, the anger not even coming up. And so, so that was even just a few months in that I saw that. And actually, that was a very powerful moment for me. It's seared into my mind, that particular moment. of just understanding just how powerful and how valuable this practice is. And I think that is one of the supports for patience, is having an understanding of the value of the practice. And so this is something that we can all reflect on, is what have you learned? What, like, maybe you're not experiencing all of the things that you have experienced in the past right in this moment, but maybe you also recognize that things are different now. Maybe you're not quite as hooked by things as much as you used to be. Or maybe you see, like in my case, even in the first few weeks, is there's a little more space around something. So in we can reflect on what have we learned? What has been the value? How has this practice supported me? And over the course of our journey, there will be more and more of that to reflect back on. You know, when I look back on, it's been 22 years of practice. The person that I was 22 years ago was so miserable and so angry and so tied up in knots. It's like it's almost like an unrecognizable being to me in some ways. So much has been released and let go of very gradually. You know, I can't say there were a couple, you know, there occasionally there are these things that happen where it's like suddenly something seems to release and let go of. And we tend to orient around those things. It's like, oh yeah, when I saw that thing, when I just broke into this state of bliss and calm, that's what I want to get to. But in my own path, in my own experience, it's really been so gradual, the letting go and the transformation, that it's very hard to say so much of this wore away this day, so much of it wore away that day. And so this is a way that we can, so using kind of a wisdom and understanding of the gradual nature of the path to support this cultivation of patience. So sometimes we can kind of highlight qualities of patience by looking at ways that we get impatient. So there's different ways, I mean, two big ways that I see in my own experience that impatience comes about. One way it comes about is if something in terms of being impatient for something pleasant to come. You know, my birthday when I was a kid, or you know, something, some big event, vacation, you know, the end of summer, school holiday or something. Just the impatience for that to come. So that's one way that we are impatient. And just reflect right now, what does it feel like? You know, what does that kind of impatience feel like? You know, it's not pleasant, actually. We sometimes think of it with, you know, it's like we think of it as excitement or something, and when we are focused on the pleasant thing that we anticipate getting, we're not actually noticing that the impatience itself has a kind of agitated, jittery quality to it. And so there can be a kind of a movement in a direction or an aspiration towards something in the practice. You know, we are aiming in a direction. It's not non-directional. We are looking towards letting go of the ways in which our mind tightens around wanting things to be a certain way, the way it kind of wants to hold on to pleasant or push away unpleasant. We're looking at that, and we're exploring the possibility of releasing greed and aversion and confusion. And so there is a direction to our journey. And yet, being on a journey and in a direction, we don't have to kind of project ourselves out there. We don't have to, it's like the difference between, well, this is what's happening right now, and this is how I can bring the tools of the practice to bear on this moment, versus the mind going, when am I going to get to that good thing? What's next? How am I going to get there? So there's a difference there. It doesn't mean that we can't be aimed and oriented and have an aspiration in a direction. But there's a not kind of leaping over the present moment. There's a real opening to this is what's happening right now. So this kind of impatience of kind of wanting to get to something pleasant points to the flip side, the kind of patience that supports that, kind of a gentle persistence, a kind of a perseverance, a steadiness of mind. These are qualities of patience, qualities that patience brings in, a diligence, a kind of a resolution or the aim or the aspiration in a particular direction. All of these can be brought in, or they're qualities that are part of the patience of our path. So these qualities sometimes, perseverance, the word patience, I think perhaps at times brings or calls to mind, especially in terms of waiting for something to happen, or, you know, waiting for something good to happen. If when I was a child, you know, I felt like I just had to sit and wait for it to come to me. And I think that that's one of the ways that we interpret the word patience, as a non-active thing. It's like sit until something happens. Like be patient. You know, that phrase that parents say to their kids, be patient. Often it means be still. Don't jump all over the place. So the, you know, that quality or that idea around patience as being passive is something I want to speak to here, because the patience of our practice is not passive. It's much more active. The quality of perseverance, of steadiness, of diligence, these are not passive qualities. So we can think about the patience of a farmer. Thanissaro Bhikkhu speaks to this, and he has a quote from his own teacher about the patience of the farmer. So his teacher said, those of you who've never lived on a farm, even you know that farmers don't have an easy life. They work hard, especially in Thailand, where they don't have a lot of labor-saving devices. When the time comes to do what needs to be done, they have to do it quickly. In other words, when the rice grains are ready, you have to harvest them quickly before the mice get to them. You have to take care of them quickly, winnow the rice quickly before any late season rain comes to spoil it. So it's not a matter of being slow or casual, this patience of the farmer. The patience of a farmer is the sort that knows you can't plant the rice today and expect to have the grains ripened tomorrow. It's going to take time, and during that time it's going to require work. So this is that diligence, that persistence of, you know, looking at what needs to happen here and now. How does this practice, how do we bring this practice to bear on this moment? And holding a patience with results. So I think, as having talked about the gradual nature of the path, that's some wisdom that can help us to recognize, well, the results aren't going to come quickly. The farmer knows that the rice doesn't ripen immediately. You know, that they can't sit out there and watch the field and say, grow, grow, grow. It's like, you know, you create the conditions, you cultivate the conditions for the rice to grow. You plant the grains, and you make sure it's got the moisture, and you keep the animals out of the field. And so you cultivate the conditions that support the natural process of the growth of that grain. And in a similar way, our practice, given certain conditions, given basically a confidence, a mindfulness, a sense of understanding, energy, mindfulness, trust, these things come together, and we bring our attention to our experience. Just the simple act of noticing, this is what's happening right now. as I did with the anger in that in the beginning of my practice. Just that simple recognition. Oh, anger is happening. I know that anger's happening right now. That was a radical shift in my mind to just shift to that and not just be angry and act out of anger, but to notice, oh, the mind is angry right now. That's what's happening. That simple practice, just recognizing that, that simple thing, that was like, sowing the seeds and making sure that the grains got nourished. Because what happened there was the mind began to transform. The mind began to let go of this habit of anger. The mind began to have more space around the anger, not because of me saying, oh, there's anger, I'm going to create space around it. It was being aware of that experience. Over time, gradually, almost imperceptibly, but within a few weeks, visibly, space was created. More ability to navigate the anger happened very naturally. And so the practice of the applying the energy and the effort to be present with it in this, it's a simple thing. When I first read this instruction, well, try being aware of your anger. It's like, I had no idea how that would work. But I was willing to try it. I was kind of willing. So this is a bit of the trust to step into taking some action. I was willing to try it. And within a few weeks, there was a little bit of an understanding about why that's helpful. It wasn't something that the results were happening very naturally, just as the grain grows very naturally. So sometimes we have to continue to persist to bring this quality of a gentle persistence, even if it looks like nothing is happening. In the first few weeks of my practice around this, I didn't consciously recognize anything that was changing. In retrospect, looking back, I can see how things were changing. But day to day, it was kind of like, oh, here's that unpleasant experience again. It was like 3 weeks in or something that I began to see, oh, this anger isn't so threatening anymore. This anger isn't so overwhelming anymore. I can see it and then get on with my day. And so there was a kind of a reflection after a few weeks, wow, this has been helpful. There has been change. There has been this gradual development. So we don't necessarily see it every day. We don't see what's happening. But then at some point, there's a kind of a looking back and a recognition, oh, there's been a change. Gill uses an analogy for this kind of recognition. Sometimes we do in our mindfulness practice have a kind of a breakthrough moment where we see something like that moment where I saw the mind kind of heading in the direction of anger and the mind going, yeah, I know where that heads. That's going to be painful. And just watching the mind just change course. That was a kind of a huge moment where there was a, that was really the moment that my mind said, yes, I'm going to do this. This is helpful. I really, in that moment, so clearly understood the value of the practice. But that moment was possible because of the months of prior practice where I hadn't seen all of the changes happening. And so the analogy that Gill uses, he says, if you're chopping wood, you have a piece of a log, and you take the hatchet and you bring it down on the log, and it probably doesn't split right away. And you bring it down again, and it still doesn't split. You keep chopping at this. You keep hitting it and hitting it. And at some point, when you hit it, it splits open. And we might think, and I loved to chop wood when I was a teenager, when we went camping, I loved that feeling of that whoosh, that cleaving and the splitting of the wood. I thought I'd hit it just right. You know, I did it just right that time. But as Gil points out, every single hit prior weakened the fiber of the wood just a little bit, so that that final hit could split the wood. And so the weakening of the fiber is not visible from the outside. But what we see and what we think of as the important part is when it splits. But actually, that's just the results after a long development of conditions. And so this is a lot of the way that our practice does unfold, in this very gradual way. And yet we can begin, you know, the more we've practiced, the more we can reflect back. Like I remember in those first few months of practice, I was reading this book that said, you know, your practice will look very different 5 years in and 10 years in. And I was thinking, 10 years, that's forever, you know. You know, what is it going to look like in 10 years? You know, it's like I could not even fathom it. But the transformation that happens over the course of the time, looking back, it's like so many shifts, so many changes happen. And so we can start to recognize some of those, even after a few weeks or a few months, to begin to recognize, oh, just a little bit of space around something that was harder. Or maybe in daily life, you start to see that certain things that used to really bug you, it's like, oh, that's not a problem anymore. It's just not an issue. Or a particular engagement in a particular kind of topic doesn't bring up as much charge. And so sometimes what we see is after a period of time that something has let go, but we didn't actually see it let go. We just recognize, wow, it doesn't seem to be coming up so much anymore. And this persistence, this gentle persistence, really supports this cultivation of the practice. Another way that we experience impatience is when things are difficult and we want that difficulty to end. We're impatient for the ending of that difficult time. This for me was a lot around transitions. So like, you know, I'm nearly at the end of something, and there was such an impatience. It's like, well, I, you know, some of it is wanting to get onto the next thing, but it's just like, oh, I've got all these things to finish up. I just want to be done with this. You know, it's like, this isn't worth my time or something. So there's this kind of sense of this thing that's happening right now is not worthwhile. And so there's this, I noticed this when I was exploring impatience. During one stretch of time, I kind of oriented around the quality of impatience, noticing when it came up, as a way of cultivating patience, essentially. Bringing, you know, this is one way to cultivate or to orient towards a wholesome quality, is to see what gets in its way. What's its opposite? And so I began looking at impatience, when impatience would arise. And I saw all these different flavors that I'm talking about. And, you know, I saw it happen in subtle ways and big ways. I picked impatience particularly because I saw it was a big one for me. You know, that I found impatience a lot in my experience. And when I started looking at it, started seeing it, you know, at first I was recognizing the big ones, like, you know, impatient to at the end of a 3-month retreat. We're getting to the end of the retreat, and we have to go through this whole integration process and talking to people, and it's like, just get me out of here. I don't want to go through this. So, you know, it's like there was an experience of unpleasantness there, and I just wanted to leap over it. So those were the kind of bigger ones. You know, it was so clear to me how much suffering there was around this impatience to get on with things, get to the next thing. And then I also saw it in so small ways, like I began to see that there was an impatience at the end of my shower. You know, I'm almost done rinsing my hair. And it's like, the mind is already leaping to the next thing. It's like, come on, this is, or while I was brushing my teeth, there was an impatience. And I began to see that this was a pattern in my mind that was much more entrenched than I thought. And actually, it was really useful to start to see it in the small, to start to see how it manifested in these little tiny ways. Because the patterns that happen in our minds, it's like if we have an impatience pattern, for instance, in our mind, we can kind of think of it as grooves in the mind. And if we experience a pattern in the small, it's like every time we experience that pattern, it wears that groove a little deeper and a little deeper and a little deeper. And so not seeing all of those small ways was actually contributing to the deepening of that rut, making it much more likely that the big ways of impatience would be experienced. And so really useful to begin to notice this. I began to notice it when I opened my drawer and it stuck a little bit. There was a flash of impatience. And I was like, wow, you know. And again, just having the trust that seeing it is helpful. Not having the approach, because again, this is the cultivation of patience, not that we can, in seeing something, then say, well, don't do that anymore. You know, that's not the way our practice unfolds. We don't just see something and say, oh, stop doing that. You know, the way the mind transforms is by noticing the small, in this case, noticing some of these small little tightenings around the impatience with brushing my teeth or opening the drawer, and feeling the constriction there, feeling the suffering of it. That is an education that the mind responds to. Because in my, you know, I had no idea impatience was so shot through my day until I started really looking at this. And seeing that began to allow it to be brought to the surface. When it's not seen, when the mind doesn't see what's happening, it's basically believing, like the story of impatience in that pulling open the drawer is, well, yank a little harder, you know, get this over with. And so acting out of that impatience actually reinforces the pattern of patience. Impatience, it reinforces the pattern of impatience. Thinking somehow that acting out of that impatience is what's getting me past the problem. So this kind of exploration of seeing that flash of the constriction, which I hadn't seen. I was not aware of just how much these little tightenings and clenches were happening all through my day around impatience. And as I started seeing that, that actually is the mind beginning to learn, oh, this is not such a helpful pattern. You know, I don't actually have to act on impatience in order to open that drawer. I don't have to act on that impatience. I can maybe use two hands and pull a little more carefully instead of just trying to pull with one, you know, one door handle, one knob. So just kind of the belief in our minds that we have to act out of these qualities reinforces them. So seeing them in the small helps the mind to understand this is not so helpful. So some of the qualities of patients that are highlighted around this kind of impatience of get me to the, you know, get rid of this thing that's this unpleasant thing that's happening, is tolerance, forbearance, endurance. And so this is actually a place of a lot of patience that comes up around our practice, because when we do turn with mindfulness to what's happening in our minds, we see a whole bunch of unpleasant stuff going on. Like impatience, I was seeing, that's unpleasant actually. There's a constriction there. Seeing the anger, experiencing the constriction of that, experiencing the pain of that. And again, it being a kind of a surprise to actually feel that in the moment, that the mind had been believing the story of anger, that, you know, if I act on this anger, or, you know, this other person's going to be miserable because I'm angry. It's like the mind was not in the present moment with its experience to feel this is suffering. And so this part of patience, of forbearance, of endurance, is pointing to the teaching that the Buddha had around the First Noble Truth. Understanding suffering. This is our path. This is how the mind begins to transform suffering. Not because we see the habits of mind and can just flip a switch and turn them off, but because we see the habits of mind and the mind begins to recognize this is suffering. It begins to understand its habits and patterns in a different way. And again, in the mode of, or in the kind of understanding of creating the conditions for the development or the growth of the path, the holding or seeing our suffering with mindfulness is the transformative condition. It is one of the main transformative conditions. There are other ways to support cultivating wholesome qualities. We can, for instance, cultivate a heart of connection and compassion and care through bringing in loving kindness. We can connect to recognizing when the wholesome qualities arise in our mind. So this was actually a revelation to me too. That I could begin to notice kindness and care and joy arising in the mind. My mind's so much oriented to the negative, to the painful, to the difficult, that it skipped over sometimes. Like I found at times I would like almost talk myself out of happiness. So there's many ways or many tools that support the cultivation of the wholesome qualities. And with patience, you know, cultivating patience, you know, I've talked about looking at what's in its way, so noticing the impatience. But also we can actively cultivate patience. One way to do that is to, first of all, recognize when it happens. We are much less oriented at times to recognizing when wholesome qualities happen, to consciously knowing this is what it feels like when the heart is connected and caring. This is what it feels like when there's patience in the mind. And so recognizing when that's happening with mindfulness is one way to support these qualities. Another way to support these qualities is, it's an interesting kind of, it's like razor's edge practice in some ways. When we are feeling impatient, you know, standing in the line in the grocery store, for instance, or waiting in the doctor's office, notice the impatience coming up and notice what we tend to want to do. You know, we may tend to, sit there and jiggle our foot, or we might, whip out our phone and start, doing something to kind of check out so that we're not experiencing what we're thinking of as the unpleasantness of this experience of waiting. So, and so we entertain ourselves, or we express in some ways this impatience through our bodies. And so we can play with this kind of razor's edge is to be fully aware that there's impatience here, and yet act like you were an actor, as though you were completely patient. Let your body relax, let your face relax. You know, often even the face gets involved. I mean, when there's things going on in our mind, qualities of heart and mind, our face often expresses these things, through maybe a little, just tightening of the face or squinching of the eyes, or even simple small things like that. Relaxing the face is a very powerful feedback for our minds. There was one study done. It was done by Daniel Ekman, who did a lot on emotions and the brain and mindfulness. And he worked with the Dalai Lama, with some of his monks, to kind of do some neurological studies around what happens with particular meditation practices. And one of the things they discovered in this exploration around the body-mind feedback loop, we often think of our face or our body expressing what we're feeling. And that's one way that the feedback loop happens. When we're impatient, at one point in the drugstore, I noticed I was impatient, and I noticed that I was throwing things into my basket. So just the gesture of impatience coming out in my physical action. So there's ways in which the mind states will influence our actions. But this teaching or this study showed that if you put an expression on your face, and what they had people do was to smile. So try it right now. Smile. Smile. See what happens. Does that change your mind? What they discovered is just simply putting a smile on your face actually alters the brain. It changes the brain to what looks more like happiness. So this feedback loop is a two-way street. And so if you can, in fully acknowledging, repressing what's happening and saying, that's not happening, I'm going to be completely calm, that doesn't seem to work. But if you fully acknowledge, yep, there's impatience here, and as I did in that drugstore, I decided, okay, I'm going to act as though I was completely patient. And I started picking things up slowly, I relaxed my face, I put them in the basket, all the while recognizing, yep, there's impatience here, but it was kind of like I had this, the way I framed it in my mind was, I'm not going to let this impatience leak out into my body. Nobody around me is going to have any idea that I'm impatient right now, even though I know that that's happening. And what surprised me was that within about a minute, the mind changed. That impatience let go. So this is another kind of tool to support our cultivation of patience. And so noticing what gets in its way, noticing when it happens, when we notice quality of patience happening, and behaving patiently. And this actually is a kind of, there's a teaching in one text that points to this, how the training around our practice is to model or aspire to model the people who are more awakened. So there's that kind of the reflection. So if you want to be peaceful, act peacefully, and yet don't repress the feeling of non-peacefulness. It's a very kind of delicate balance of the mind. But in this way, behaving patiently, cultivating patience, behaving peacefully, cultivating peace, behaving kindly cultivates kindness. If we acknowledge and recognize, there's some unkindness in here, but I'm going to act kind. In this way, we can see that the path reflects the goal. I think the Dalai Lama said something like, the path isn't the way to peace. Peace is the path. Kind of turning around that. Practicing peace. Practicing patience. And not repressing what's happening in our minds. So the tolerance of difficulties of practice is a big part of the patience, of opening to and holding the suffering that happens. And the kind of persistence that takes, it's humbling to see what's in there. And yet, when we have the trust, and I think trust is a huge support for cultivating patience, when we have the trust that this is useful, this is helpful, and we get that feedback, sometimes not. It doesn't take very long for that feedback to be experienced. As in my story, within a couple months, I saw, I see how this works. That I could see that the prior months of having noticed the anger and just noticed it helped the mind to kind of see, well, that way lies suffering. So that there was this redirection that happened just because of that path, just because of that practice. So the trust, that moment of seeing the mind shift away from something that had been such a habitual pattern was a great support for trust. And I was willing to do a lot of, okay, just keep going, just keep persisting. Forbear with the difficulties, endure with them, explore, keep going, because of understanding the value of that. And so the path in this way reinforces itself and supports itself. As the more we engage, the more we're persistent, the more benefits we see, which then feeds back, and because we've seen the benefits, we're more persistent, we're more engaged. Underlying both of these different kinds of patience, these patience around results and patience around difficulty, is an underlying quality of acceptance that is kind of in patience. That as the mind really begins to land more fully in patience, it becomes very accepting of things as they are right now. It's not fighting, wanting it to be some other way. Ajahn Sumedho says, it's a great relief to accept the way things are, because the only real misery is wanting them in some other way. We want to get to the next thing. We want to get rid of this unpleasant thing. And the acceptance is about acknowledging, well, this is what's happening. The word acceptance sometimes has this quality. When I first kind of thought about this or worked with this word of acceptance, I thought, well, in order to accept this, I have to agree with it. I have to like it or appreciate it in some way. And that is not what acceptance means. Acceptance, there's another teacher, a Zen teacher, who had a beautiful reflection on acceptance. He said, to accept, this is Daishin Morgan, a Zen teacher, to accept means to receive what is offered. The circumstances of life give rise to conditions, and our acceptance of these conditions is just the acceptance of things as they are. What is not meant by the Buddhist idea of acceptance is any agreement or disagreement with the way things are. Acceptance is about basing ourselves in reality, not about making judgments of liking and disliking. To accept a situation is to be grounded in the actual state of things, without getting lost in ideals or fantasies of how we would like things to be. We then have a good basis from which to see what action may be called for. Acceptance does not imply inertia. On the contrary, to be grounded in reality gives rise to a true response. So this is that acceptance. It's not about liking or not liking or agreeing or disagreeing. It's about saying, well, this is what's here. Opening to that, this is what's here, without pushing, pulling, without clinging, without resisting, then our minds begin to understand a new way to meet this. And as Daishin Morgan says, to be grounded in this gives rise to a responsiveness instead of a reacting. And this is an important piece about patience, is recognizing that it's not about non-action. There's definitely situations and times where, you know, it's like, how can we be patient with injustice? When somebody's acting unjustly in the world, what does it mean to be impatient with that? What does it mean to accept that? I think what it means is to accept, this is actually what's happening. My eyes are open. I see this is injustice. I see this is harmful. It is acknowledging the harm of it. It's acknowledging the unskillfulness of this injustice. And the response that comes with that is not coming out of anger and hatred, but out of compassion and love. And so this is what acceptance does for us. It's not about saying, oh, injustice is happening. Okay. We land in the truth of, yes, I understand this is happening, and this is harmful. And the heart wants to move to alleviate that in some way. So, that's some reflections on patience, and I'm over a couple minutes, sorry about that. See you next week, some of you. And if any of you have questions or comments, I'm happy to stay for a few minutes and talk a little more.